Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Tom Shattuck Show on WTIC News Talk 1080.
All right, it is hour three of the Tom Shattuck Show right here on WTIC. We have frequently talked about the Abraham Accords, and this is remarkably, you know, it's interesting. There would have been wall-to-wall coverage because what we've got here is cooperation between Israel and many of its Arab neighbors, something that was thought to be totally impossible just recently, but now it is the new reality. So I am thrilled to bring on Jason D. Greenblatt. He is the author of In the Path of Abraham, How Donald Trump Made Peace in the Middle East and How to Stop Joe Biden from Unmaking It. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So I don't know where to start because you've done so much work in this area, and or maybe we should start with the Peace to Prosperity Plan, which was the inception of which began, I assume, in the Trump administration, or did it predate it?
No, it began with us. I mean, there were obviously other efforts to promote peace between Israel and the Palestinians, but we took a fresh approach. We ended up drafting the Peace to Prosperity Plan, which was somewhere between 60 and 80 pages, plus a very robust economic plan for the Palestinians, which was attached. Prior efforts really had done very, one-page, two-page, lofty, aspirational statements about a two-state solution, the prospect mm-hmm. of peace. And I'm not criticizing that. You know, those were good efforts, but they failed. We decided to take a different approach and try to give enough detail to everybody to understand what the hard compromises would be in order to make peace, how life would look. That was what President Trump released to try to achieve peace between Israel and the Palestinians, as well as its Arab neighbors, about 7 or 8 months before the Abraham Accords were actually done.
So how was it that you were able to... I mean, obviously, the Palestinian situation, it continues. How were you able to speak to the Arab countries involved in the Abraham Accords without them being tethered in negotiations to the Palestinians?
Great question. So essentially what happened is the Palestinians cut off ties from the Trump administration before even seeing the peace plan. They cut it off because President Trump followed U.S. law by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. That was a law that many presidential candidates promised to follow.
Yep.
Each of them failed to follow it. He did it. He moved the embassy. And the Palestinians took the approach that this administration was anti-Palestinian, which isn't true. We were simply following U.S. law. They made statements such as, "We hope the peace plan is born dead," before they even saw the peace plan.
And that's great.
It's instead of trying to help their people and negotiate in good faith, you don't like the plan, tell us what you don't like, tell mm-hmm. us what you'd like to change, they just wouldn't even look at it. And that showed the Arab countries once again that the Palestinians are not serious about negotiating in good faith. They have their own futures they have to worry about, they have their own national security interests, and we essentially were able to take away the veto card from Palestinian leadership that wasn't willing to engage, and the Arabs decided, or some of the Arab countries, the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco and Sudan, and they decided that it was time to see what kind of relationship could be developed with Israel. And I give their leaders tremendous credit, real courageous And that was what resulted in the Abraham Accords.
So, Jason, at the time, of course, along with anything that Donald Trump did, we were told that moving the embassy to Jerusalem would result in chaos and consternation among the Arab neighbors, and it would be a global disaster. Were you concerned? Were you confident that move would not result in terrible outcomes?
So I cover this in the book. It's sort of amazing, and again, I don't want to blame prior presidents for not following through. We ran a very extensive interagency process. This was not done on a whim. In fact, President Trump signed one of those national security waivers 6 months into his term because he wanted to be sure that he was looking at everything correctly. Of course, he wanted to keep his promise, right this historic wrong, allow Israel to choose its capital like anybody else. But we assessed the situation, and of course, it was his ultimate decision not to follow the path that others had done, and he went ahead and did it. He didn't agree with the assessments. We were getting calls left and right about how we would almost start this new Middle East war. Everyone was wrong, and President Trump was right.
Wow. I mean, that shows what resolve. What resolve? Did you were you involved with him personally, directly, while that decision was being made? Could you read him? How was he taking all of this in when he made the decision?
So he has this unique capacity to listen to everybody, and he did. This is not anything. I mean, I worked for him for 20 years before the White House. He takes input from lots and lots of different people, and then he ultimately makes the decision that he thinks is right. So it was a very long process and many, many meetings. I was in some, not all, but I think he felt that this was absolutely the right thing to do. He committed to doing it. And he also felt, and he's right, look, I mean, you know, we're several years after this happened. The announcement on Jerusalem was in December 2017. The embassy was moved in May of 2018. So it's fair to say that he made the correct decision. He felt a lot of this was just diplomats and world leaders saying the same old thing, not really meaning it, not really understanding it, manipulating it. And he had strong conviction here about this.
It's almost as if because he wasn't in politics, he was almost undisciplined enough to take things literally and actually do them. You know, but he didn't sit around to wait for people to scare him out of decision making. Now,
I think that's right. People sometimes criticize the outsider coming in or the outsiders because our small team of peacemakers, we're all outsiders. And I think sometimes when you're coming from the outside, you look at things with a fresh pair of eyes. You know you have a lot to learn. But when you learn it, you also look at, you don't get stuck in the steeped wisdom of what people always believed. And you say, let's see if this is true. Let's see if this is accurate. And that's also how the Abraham Accords were done.
We are speaking to Jason Greenblatt. He is the author of In the Path of Abraham, How Donald Trump Made Peace in the Middle East and How to Stop Joe Biden from Unmaking It. So we're going to get to Biden in a moment, but how much did the Iran deal affect this? Now, I've heard that the Iran deal essentially almost scared some of the Gulf Arab states into the arms of Israel, or at least into working together. I've also heard that it wasn't a big impact. What did the arms deal do? What was the effect? The Iran deal. What was the effect of that on the Abraham Accords?
I think the Iran deal was very important. The region, Israel and its Arab neighbors, all felt abandoned by the Obama administration because of the JCPOA, the Iran deal. And we came in, President Trump had railed against it during the campaign and said he was going to rip it up because it made no sense in so many different ways. And it's not just the nuclear threat, by the way. Everyone should know that Iran got a fortune of money, which they used to then foment terrorism around the world. Their proxies in Lebanon, Hezbollah, proxies in Gaza, Hamas attacks Israel. Their terrorist proxies in Yemen fire rockets at the UAE and Saudi Arabia. So there's a two-aspect thing that caused the entire region to be very upset with the Obama administration. And everybody realizes they're trying to change the future in the region. The Arab countries have all these visions to create very different societies than they had several years ago. Tremendous number of building projects and new cities. I mean, really, it's remarkable what they have envisioned and what they're actually creating. And they realize that their future is better with Israel. And Israel realizes that their future could be better with the Arab countries. So the Iran deal was one major factor. There were others as well, but look where we are now with the Iran deal. They keep trying to believe that this Iranian regime doesn't want to destroy Israel and wipe it off the face of the earth, doesn't then want to attack America. And we rely on European allies who don't have America's interests at heart. We're not even negotiating ourselves. We're negotiating through Europeans.
Through the Russians, as a matter of fact. Jason, let me ask you something. Why are we so obsessed? Why are Democrats so obsessed with doing this with Iran? They've been it's been a gangster government since the late 70s. They've been a home and source for global terrorism nonstop. They certainly were fighting a proxy battle against American troops in Iraq. What is the obsession to work with the Iranians when they've been adversarial?
So some of it, a large part, I think, comes from the notion that they think everybody really wants peace and to live happily and have a good future for our kids. Unfortunately, the reality is, well, I'd love that to be true. It's not true. The Iranian regime doesn't care at all about its own people. They want to take over the Middle East and possibly beyond. They want to kill and destroy, as I said, Israel and others. So I think the Democrats are those who believe that the Iran deal is the right deal, and not all Democrats do, and maybe some Republicans do, but those who support this deal believe that we sign this deal, Kumbaya will break out, the stars will align, everybody's going to sing and dance peace songs. It's just not true. It's not accurate. It's not correct. And the only thing the Iran deal did was temporarily kick the nuclear threat a couple of years down the road. And after that, the Iranian regime could have actually legally created nuclear weapons. So what do you say to your kids or your grandkids that you bought a couple of years, maybe even 5 years, and then the world is an even bigger mess than it was before? That's not a solution.
I mean, Jason, weren't they almost immediately out of compliance, the Iranians?
So many people say that they definitely cheated. The Israelis, in fact, went in, I forget if it was in 2018 or 2019, showed the world the cheating. They released all the evidence. It was quite a remarkable mission, almost like a meet for a TV special in terms of what they did. So many would say that they were cheating. But even if you give them the benefit of the doubt that they weren't cheating, which is a real stretch, I don't think that's true, it doesn't matter, because they would have immediately, this regime in Iran would have immediately jumped into the nuclear weapons program. It was putting our heads in the sand. I call it ostrich diplomacy.
So the second half of the title of your book is "And How to Stop Joe Biden from Unmaking It." That's the Abraham Accords. Last year, I think he sanctioned the Saudis, essentially not helping them with a fight in Yemen. First of all, Has the relationship been mended? I know that he went there to last week to prostrate himself. Has this administration been friendlier to the Saudis since?
So until the trip last week, he was terribly disrespectful to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, certainly to the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman. He alienated them. He said during the campaign he would make them the pariah that they are, that there's very little social redeeming value in the country, which is an outrageous way to talk about an ally. Obviously, things have changed. He had a disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Inflation has gone wild. Oil prices have surged. So he decided he needed to take a trip there to try to mend the fences. I would say that I guess I'm of two minds here. On the one hand, he spent a whole lot of time pretending he wasn't going to meet the Crown Prince. You know, every time he was asked, he was making excuses, saying he's going there for a visit to meet Arab leaders, and maybe the Crown Prince will be in the room. He also didn't say he was going to go beg for oil, but he ended up going there. He did meet the Crown Prince. Americans are smart. They don't buy the story that he's not meeting the Crown Prince. He met him. He didn't say anything publicly about what he discussed in terms of oil. And I think that he was able to at least turn the page on the relationship in the right direction. I think there are many more pages or chapters even for him to properly mend that relationship. But at least it was a step in the right direction.
And how instrumental was Netanyahu in the negotiation? Obviously, he was leading the country, Israel at the time. But was he an aggressively amenable partner in negotiations, et cetera? Or was he somebody who had to be cajoled?
Well, in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian issue, he wants peace, but wanted, you know, he was the leader at the time, But he wanted a realistic peace, one that would always keep Israel safe and secure, and he was very, very careful in how he was approaching it, and I think he was approaching it the right way. He didn't want to find out that there would be a Palestinian state that the next day or a year later or 5 years later would attack Israel. As to the Abraham Accords,
yes,
look, it didn't come out of thin air, right? Prime Minister Netanyahu and others have been speaking to some of these Arab countries for a long time, quietly behind the scenes, under the table, and developed some relationships. So while, of course, the leaders of the Arab countries who signed them, and even those who didn't sign, but, you know, quietly at least backed it or didn't upset the apple cart, they're the courageous, bold leaders who get tremendous credit. But Bibi Netanyahu does as well, not only for starting us down that path, but also obviously being very supportive, it was very, very important to him. So he equally gets credit. Each of the leaders involved get tremendous credit. Of course, President Trump himself, who set all this into motion and wrapped it all up into a nice, neat package.
We are speaking to Jason Greenblatt. He's the author of In the Path of Abraham, How Donald Trump Made Peace in the Middle East and How to Stop Joe Biden from Unmaking It. Now, another thing that was in the Abraham Accords was it removed travel restrictions. So am I right? And I've heard John Podhoretz talk about this, that there are conventions, et cetera, in Israel that Arabs are populating and vice versa. Is that happening? Are we at that stage already?
I'm not following the question. Sorry.
What I'm saying is, for instance, is there tourism in like Jerusalem now where Muslims are going to visit that's been opened up or thriving now as a result of?
Yeah, so there's travel restrictions between the Abraham Accords countries exist, and in fact, there are many, many Israelis traveling to places like Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Travel in the other direction is not quite as extensive. Their population is smaller, but it does happen, and that is one of the biggest benefits of the Abraham Accords right now. Even through COVID, you know, they've managed to find each other, and, you know, I think everybody from those countries and even beyond, even a country like Saudi Arabia, should come here. Come to Jerusalem, see the truth. I'm in Jerusalem now. You see Jews and Arabs walking around the old city. Everybody's going about their business. People are praying at their holy places. Yes, tension arises from time to time. But what you see in real life and what you read about in the papers sometimes are wildly different.
That is, I mean, that's the dream, I guess, isn't it? To have not only vacation destinations, but big conventions, business outings, etc., going both ways. Obviously, like you said, it's Israel into the other countries is easier because there's just more geography there. But I mean, for cultures to be intermingling, I mean, you must be so fulfilled just emotionally with seeing it.
Absolutely. Anytime I see my Israeli friends or even Jews from America who go to these Muslim countries or Muslims from these countries who go to Israel, and everybody kind of reports back and says, well, you guys, you know, President Trump and the team did something amazing because now we could visit places, learn about them, interact with people. I just feel very emotional about it because I experienced that for 3 years, an observant Jew from New Jersey who had never stepped foot in any of these countries and was treated so warmly and respectfully and, you know, just really fell in love with these countries. Now everybody gets to experience it. It's really beautiful.
That is so wonderful to hear. Can I ask you quickly, before we let you go, what was Jared Kushner to work with? What was it like?
Amazing. First of all, he has the most optimism of any human being I've ever seen. So in the face of a conflict that seems so intractable, you know, nothing would faze him in terms of keeping us marching in the right direction. Very strategic, developed really, really strong relationships. He was just an outstanding team leader.
That's great to hear. You know, of course, with the American media, he gets no credit for anything, not helping with the Abraham Accords, not with the First Step Act whatsoever. I hope maybe in your part of the world where you are right now, maybe he's more, considered, rightfully a man of great accomplishments. I hope so, at least.
I think this region recognizes what he did and what he accomplished, and unfortunately in America, we're a deeply divided country right now, and there are people who just want to tear down anything positive, sometimes if it has to, because it has to do with President Trump, other times because they're either jealous or they hate, and I wish people would take a step back and realize the remarkable things that Jared helped create.
Well, and so thank you to Jared, and thank you to you, Jason Greenblatt. The book is In the Path of Abraham, How Donald Trump Made Peace in the Middle East and How to Stop Joe Biden from Unmaking It. Really, you've helped do what we all considered was the impossible. And it's so wonderful to know that things are getting better and better. And congratulations on the book. By the way, everybody can get the book on Amazon. Is there somewhere where you'd prefer them to buy the book, Jason?
Amazon's great. Wherever booksellers are selling it, but Amazon, of course, is super easy.
Wow, this is great. And I'm thrilled to be speaking to somebody who's such an important part of history in the region. Jason, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me as a guest. Take care.
Anytime. Take care. That is Jason Greenblatt. And once again, the Abraham Accords, you don't have to love President Trump, but what he did was incredible. The Trump administration, the Abraham Accords, and bringing peace between Gulf Arab states and Israel was at one time thought unthinkable. And like he said, you know, there's travel between them now, and the cultures are learning more about each other. And that is great for the world. That is absolutely fantastic. Okay, when we get back, unfortunately, we're going to talk about some stuff that's not so great for the world, but stick with us. My name is Tom Shattuck. This is WTIC News Talk 1080.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.